and welcome to the podcast that discusses all things gaming. Coming to you from the home of Indie PopCon, Gen Con, and the gaming capital of the world, we are the Established Facts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 175, the actual episode 175, not like
the false one like last time.
Right, exactly. I am your host, Big Don, and with me today...
This is Josh.
Again. Just the two of us hanging out. We wanted to go into a discussion about the hero's story versus the villain's version. So, what makes a great hero story versus what makes a good villain story? Now, what kind of brought this into existence was a couple of conversations that I had with my wife and with a couple of friends of ours, just about examining the idea of what makes a great villain. Versus why are we attracted to the story of a hero, and how they're very similar in structure but very different in result. And then, of course, obviously, we're not going to talk about any spoilers because I have not yet seen it. But, you know, another thing that kind of brought this up was the discussion of Thanos in the new Infinity Wars movie and things like that. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, I will have seen it, but I can't promise anything. but there won't be any spoilers on this, so don't worry.
Okay, so we can't talk about it very long.
No. No, we can't.
All right.
And we can, I think we can maybe just make a nod to the fact that there's more to the character than what we think at first, but that's as far as, yeah, that's as far as we'll go. So Josh is looking at me like, okay, so the Thanos discussion is now over.
Right.
But we can talk about, you know.
Thanos is a dad.
Yeah.
Let me just say that.
Yeah,
he's. How's that help? He's a dad. Remember that.
Yep. Okay. So we'll go ahead and do our versus topic. Hero story versus villain version. So Joshy, are you more inclined to side with what the villain is doing or side with what the hero is doing?
Being as I'm the lawful or neutral good member of this podcast, I am very much a fan of the hero's story. I'm not anti-villain because a good villain story is a good villain story, but I'm very much the pro-hero.
And
it's going to be really hard to sit on the fence with only two of us.
No, I agree. So you know what? For that reason, and because I feel like it's true, it's a true statement to my empathy. I think I'm probably more interested in the villain story than the hero story, because I think sometimes underneath the surface, it's a much more interesting story. Not to take anything away from the hero's experience. So, Joshy, being the more lawful good, neutral good hero of the group, what attracts you to the hero story, and what makes a good hero story?
Well, some of you might think I was going to say the good must always triumph over evil, and the down with the bad guys, down with this, blah blah blah. That's an important element in the hero story, but a good hero story is very much about redemption. And there are a lot of heroes that start out good, stay good, and are always good. But I think those are boring. But a redemption story, one who is, I've made mistakes, and I'm trying to make up for those. Or I'm something bad happened to me and I've been saved, and as a result, I'm going to use that for the greater good. I think ultimately there is always good in humanity if they're willing to find that source that brings it out of them. And as a result, you can be a hero if you're willing to embrace that. And I think that's why I felt very philosophical the way I just said that, and I didn't mean to, but I think that's what draws me to the hero's story, is the ability to be redeemed and or provide redemption for those in trouble.
Okay. I would have to say for myself, and kind of choosing the villain's side of thing, what pulls me into a villain story, and I think what pulls a lot of people into a villain story, is, and you know, Josh and I are very empathetic in a lot of ways with, in life, with our friends, with, you know, life experiences and things like that. But I think what pulls me into a villain story sometimes more than a hero story is I know right from wrong, and I know that if given the same choice that a hero has, I would probably choose that same direction. But what is so intriguing to me about a villain story is when you look at the experiences that the villain goes through to get to the point that they're at, a good villain story, and why I like them so much, is when you would ask yourself, if given the same circumstance, would I really choose a different decision than what they have chosen? I think that, you know, there are a lot of really great examples of this. And, you know, obviously we'll kind of get into that a little bit more when we talk about some of the differences between the hero story and the villain's, you know, the villain's story. But in general, what I want to talk about first is what, you know, looking at the difference between a hero and a villain, sometimes the separation can be extremely slim.
Or extremely obvious.
Or extremely obvious. Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, that's usually the go-to, is making it extremely obvious that this person is obviously the good guy, this person is obviously the bad guy. So, Josh, characteristically speaking, or stereotypically speaking, what in your mind defines what a hero looks like, acts like, and kind of what puts them on the path of being that hero? And if you have some ideas of like actual characters from stories or games or something like that you can think of, you know, obviously cite those as well.
Captain America.
Okay.
Or maybe better served, Steve Rogers.
Okay.
State that. I'm not spoiling because this is more through Civil War than it is Infinity War. Steve Rogers, when recruited, I'm speaking particularly in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the movies, because I don't know the comics as well. So consider it in this bubble. Steve Rogers always wanted to serve his country. Steve Rogers was then recruited in as an opportunity to, as I mentioned before, redeem himself as the scrawny kid who was more interested in helping his country than his own physical like issues. He would do whatever it took. So he takes the serum. He becomes the super soldier. They make him into basically a, you know, a party trick, you know, somebody that's there to build up the troops. And but he wouldn't stop there. He wanted to serve his country. He served his country, but he wanted to help in the war. So stuff happens. He ends up helping in the war. And then he makes that sacrifice, diving that plane into the frozen tundra to save all these people, save millions. 70 years later, he's thawed, found, and brought in to become a part of the Avengers. Fast forward a little bit. He ends up helping the Avengers ultimately to all of it was about stopping the Tesseract. All of it was to him. He didn't care. It didn't matter to him what cost it would be for him, as long as the Earth, because now it become a global thing. The Earth was saved. Now fast forward again to Civil War. And It wasn't as much about country or about the world. It was about what was right. And in that situation, he stood up against the Sokovia Accords because it wasn't right and wasn't going to sign it because people have the right to their privacy and the freedom to decide how they're going to do what they're going to do. It doesn't mean that they have the freedom to do the wrong things.
Whatever they want to do, right.
But they certainly have the freedom to not be spied on by the government. And ultimately, when it comes to Infinity War, he does show up to help because it's right. You have to say, again, we're back to this global scale. We have to save the world. And in this instance, save the universe.
Yeah.
For me, Captain America, Steve Rogers, because by the time we reach Infinity War, it's no longer about America. It's just about what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And the Nomad or whatever they end up calling him.
Captain Nomad. Yeah.
He defines doing that which is right sacrificially in order to make sure that the world can live in peace. And that is a hero. I mean, everything that a hero should stand for, that is your model. And he went through some rough stuff, losing Bucky, losing Agent Carter, or what in the world is her name? Peggy Carter.
Peggy
Carter. He was friends with her and had to watch her die, you know, and all the different things that happened even on his watch. And yet it never changed the mission.
Sure.
Do what is right. And that, man, I'm absorbed in that story. They could write just Captain America movies and I'd be totally on board.
Okay. And so I like that. I like where you have gone with that, because I think it opens a lot of doors for why I can side with the villain story. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason that the villain story to me is so interesting, the reason why it is so encapsulating to my attention, if you will, is they mirror the hero and the villain story. I feel like a good villain story mirrors the hero story in a lot of ways, but it's inevitably the other side of the story. When you look at the, kind of staying with the theme that you brought up, Joshy, when you look at Loki, you know, using a similarity to the MCU, Loki is a villain.
Oh yeah.
In every sense. And I will say, on a side note, the relationship between Loki and Thor is absolutely the relationship that I would have with my brother if my brother was a villain, which in a lot of ways he is. But you know, that's prime. But in general, what I love about the villain story, when you look at characters like Loki, when you look at characters like Voldemort, Lord Voldemort from the Harry Potter series, when you look at characters like Khan from Star Trek, they have a very similar story to the heroes we love, but when given the choice, instead of going left, they went right. Instead of being a leader of people who respect them, they are a leader of people who fear them a lot of times, which is very Machiavellian, you know, whether to be loved or to be feared, which one is greater. I think what is really interesting about the villain is finding out why they went right instead of going left, why they decided to go to a darker place than try and find redemption in the light. Why, when given the opportunity to save his family, did Anakin decide to be selfish versus falling into the help of the one that he would call his mentor and kind of stand in paternal influence in a lot of his life? You know, that is the story that interests me. And I think that's probably why I like the villain story so much, is because there are those questions of, if this person would have turned left with everybody else instead of right, what would they have become? You know, and I think kind of a cool example of what that middle road is a character like, for example, the Punisher. You know, he you know, when given the opportunity to do the right thing, when he was a police officer, he did the right thing. And then when given the opportunity to redeem his family, instead of leaving it in the hands of people who were failing, he took it into his own hands. And he is the anti-hero. He's not a villain. He's an anti-hero.
Anti-hero.
Sure.
That's a really good point. It seems there's always this delineating factor between the heroes and villains. And I think anti-hero has kind of found its way into the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, The Punisher, the upcoming Tom Hardy movie of Venom.
Oh my gosh.
They're gearing that whole movie around anti-hero.
Yeah. Which, villain is definitely what Venom is in the beginning. For the comic book series.
Sure.
I don't necessarily... I've only seen one teaser. I have not seen
most
any of the
trailer.
New... Okay.
That's all
I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Venom is actually one of my favorite characters in the Marvel comic book universe, cinematic universe in general.
Sure.
So...
Well, that's... I can tell you that's where that's gearing. The thing that's... I almost wonder if the anti-hero is even more compelling than the villain and hero story. Now, I know we're trying to discuss villains and heroes, but we've been through the versus topic, so we can go on a
sure.
tangent.
Yeah. Yes, we can.
In your conversation about the villains, the why,
mm-hmm.
I think is extremely important. And I think the only difference between an anti-hero and a villain, or even an anti-hero and a hero, is the means in which they accomplish the why. So your Punisher,
mm-hmm.
he's going to kill
everyone. Yeah.
The hero would look and go, yeah, he absolutely deserves to be punished legally.
Sure.
Or the villain would be like, yeah, look at you killing them people. Yeah. Oh, wait, you're coming to kill me. That's a problem.
Not
we should
okay.
probably not do
not
that.
Not okay. Change the channel.
Look the other way. Oh, look, a goose. Poof. Anyways. But when all three of them, frankly, share a why, which is totally feasible in... the Netflix Daredevil series, when you're dealing with Daredevil and his issues with the hand, and the Punisher, and he's got some issues with the hand, and then the hand having issues with the two of them, all of them are trying to do it for the betterment of the city, but they're all doing it in different means. So is that ultimately what kind of separates all three of them, is the way in which they accomplish them? Unless, of course, they're, you know, psychopaths like a
the
Ledger
Joker.
Mm-hmm. Who's just chaos for chaos sake.
Right. Well, and I think that brings up a very good point. I think when I look at the scale of hero, anti-hero, villain, I actually immediately think of either a Venn diagram, which I think is very appropriate
very
for
much.
This, or if you look at the 9 different alignments of, say, a Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder character, a lot of times you'll have your heroes fall within the lawful, neutral, or chaotic good. You'll have your villains fall within the lawful, neutral, or chaotic evil, and then your anti-heroes kind of fall in that neutral line somewhere, which is basically the exact same as a Venn diagram. I think the difference between... I think the there's probably even some gray area with, like, say, for example, your chaotic good...
Sure.
...characters.
Yeah.
Anyone chaotic, I think, kind of falls within that anti-hero. Because, for example, if you look at a character like Artemis Entreri from the Dark Elf series, the series with Dritz in it, he is very much... He and Dritz Darden are, like, physically and story-wise and empathetically the mirror... opposite image of one another. there are times in the story between the two of them when Dritz kind of has, if you never read any of Bob Salvatore's books with Dritz in it, there are times when the story, the chapters in between the chapter breaks, there will be like a diary entry where he's specifically talking to himself, like it's an internal monologue. And he talks about in several of these actually, but in one specifically that I can think of was one of the first times he starts examining who Artemis Entreri is. And he says to himself, if I would have stayed in the world of the drow, if I would have stayed in the world of the dark elf, would I not possibly be the same as Artemis Entreri? Because Artemis Entreri, when you first meet him, is a very selfish and evil guy. He's very much, in my opinion, a chaotic evil character. Whereas Dritz is a very much chaotic good character. He doesn't like to follow the norm. He wants to do good for good's sake. Whereas Artemis doesn't want to follow the norm, and he wants to do evil for evil's sake. It's not necessarily in a chaotic way like the Joker is. Like, it's not psychopathic. It's not even sociopathic. It's really just selfish. Megalomania may have been one of the, you know, biggest things that he suffers from in the series for a long time. What I think the anti-hero is definitely kind of the muddying of those two waters. You have a character like the Punisher that the first time you ever, if I'm not mistaken, which hopefully our comic book friends and nerds will correct me if I am, the first time you see the Punisher is in a Spider-Man episode where he's literally after the Spider-Man. Because from every newspaper that comes out, Spider-Man is a criminal. He's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is a blight on the city, and he needs to be eliminated, and that's what the Punisher shows up to do, because that's his job, is he is this physical enforcer of what is good and what is justice, but it's his definition. It's not necessarily always the clearest definition of what is just, and I think that that's kind of what the anti-hero is. They're fluid. They have a tendency to use law or chaos, good or evil, to their advantage. And it's not necessarily always a bad thing. I mean, if you look at, like, Deadpool would be another version of anti-hero. He does not always do the good and right thing. And normally it's because of a selfish agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I'd say, you know, at least 51% of him wants to do what's good and right in the world. Same with the Punisher. But there's always that selfish agenda of what is going to happen. And I think that it is, I think where the hero is the altruistic idea that we have for a character where, you know, they want to do good for good's sake. They want to take care of the people that they love. They even want to take care of the people they don't even know, to make sure that good happens in the world. The villain, he wants to destroy. He wants to use his power and his will and his mind to weigh on people, to control people, to control his situation, to control his environment and setting. Like, it's all about control for the most part when it comes to that. Whereas good is willing a lot of times, even when you have, like, for example, a paladin that is lawful good. Paladins who are lawful good, your alignment does not set you on your attitude for the entirety of whatever you're playing that character as, or whatever that a character. I mean, look at Captain America. Like you just brought up, in my opinion, Captain America is probably the closest thing to a lawful good character that you could have in the Marvel Universe. Even still, knowing that, spoiler alert, that Bucky Barnes was the one who killed Tony Stark's parents.
That was in Civil War, not Infinity War.
Right. That's in Civil War.
We're being very clear that we were not saying anything about Infinity War.
No. But that's my point, is he knows. And in my opinion, the lawful thing for him to have done would have been to tell Tony so that the proper course of action would have happened with Bucky. But because he has such a love for Bucky and he feels like he owes him so much, he's willing to put that on the back burner for that specific amount of time so as to try and find a resolution. And when that resolution is not found, he falls within the loyalty and, in my opinion, the direction that he is most loyal is going to be in the oldest relationship he has.
Right, but remember, he's also following this from his, this is the lost side of him, that Bucky, though his physical hands are the ones that were doing it, the brainwashing element that was put in him was actually what caused him to do it. Therefore, it, for him, he's not said anything because he's not been able to find a way in court to prove it.
Sure.
Because he wants to prove it.
Right.
But they, without Zemo's confession, they're not going to be able to prove it in court, which would thus put Bucky as a fugitive because now we know he killed such and such person.
Exactly. And I agree with you. But that's what I'm saying. Like, Captain America is the closest. I mean, he is dead on lawful good character. But even in this situation, he is willing and able to just step away from that restriction to say, A, there's no evidence that can prove, that I can show proof, that Bucky was brainwashed like I know he was. But he also owes Bucky his loyalty from even before he was Captain America, because they were best friends. And even though he and Tony are best friends, co-Avengers, you know, work together, whatever their relationship is at that time, you know, he wants to honor the loyalty he has with Bucky, and so he's willing to step away from that restriction in his life. But on top of that, he also, when Tony says to him about the shield and how it was his father that gave him that shield, he leaves the shield. And to me, that says, I have given you what I owe you, and now I'm giving him what I owe him, which is an opportunity. And so I think that, we kind of got a little sidetracked, what I'm trying to say is...
All the established facts.
Yeah, I know, right? And it's only two of us, which is... Really, what I'm trying to say is, when you're dealing with a hero, you... Don't restrict yourself. If you're playing a hero in a game, or if you're watching a hero in a movie, you can't be so close-minded as to think that every time they have the choice to do good, do bad, do good, do bad, they're always going to choose do good. Because on occasion, it may be pertinent for that situation for them to not do what is expected. If you look at a completely different example, Frodo Baggins is the hero of the Lord of the Rings series. Now, I have not read the book, so I know that there are a lot of details you don't get, but if you're talking about cinematically, when you watch the movies, you see him going down this hero's journey. As soon as I get to Mount, you know, or as soon as I get to Mordor, I'm going to throw this ring in the fire. And then he gets there, and then something completely different happens to him. And it's like, he is still the hero, but he is affected by everything that has happened to him to that point. And that's exactly the same thing with Cap. He is affected by everything that's happened up to that point, you know, and obviously it is the sum of everything that finally kind of helps him make that decision. And I think that that is also, you know, again, looking at the villain journey versus the hero journey. When you look at somebody, say, for example, like Magneto, when I was having this conversation with my wife, we happened to start talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender. And if you have seen the series with the Legends of Korra, who is the new Avatar, there is in season, or in book three, if you will, or season three, there is a villain named Zaheer. And he is a normal person that wants basically the spirit world and the regular world kind of combined together. It ignites the bending abilities in normal people that would not normally have them. Well, Zaheer happens to be one of these persons that this ability, he becomes an airbender. He's actually a leader of an anarchist group called the Red Lotus. I know you don't know any of this stuff. It's okay. I'm just kind of giving you a little bit of a background. But we were talking about what makes Zaheer such a great villain. And in my opinion, the best villain of that entire series is that everything he talks about, the rationale that he has, is 100% transparent and completely viable. And you kind of look at that and you go, if I was oppressed my whole life, like Magneto, if I was, you know, if I was a Jewish man who grew up in Poland, or I can't remember exactly where he's from, but and came from a family, a World War II family that was captured and imprisoned and killed in a concentration camp, and now I'm a mutant. And I have these supernatural powers, and the people that I connect with are being oppressed just like they were when I was a child. Why is it not my responsibility to eliminate those oppressing us? And in my opinion, that's when you just kind of stop and you look at yourself and go, wow, if that was my life, how would my choices and my decisions differ from what he has done? And would I be the villain of my own story, or would I be the hero? Because the other thing is, in a villain's eyes, they are the hero of their own story. But they are the opposite of what's happening around them.
You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Right. That's exactly it.
By the way, anyone who doesn't think that DC can hold strong characters needs to really pay attention to the Bane that was in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
That got some grief because it was not like the comic books. But man, there was some serious scarring that was going on with that particular Bane.
Right.
And his brainwashing by Talia. Once you find that out later, spoiler, way past the what is the statute of limitations on that one, but still, when you get past that brainwashing, you can also see that he was a man that was hurt, that was discarded, that was basically thrown away, and had to claw his way out of a prison, and was now seeking revenge as a result of that. And yeah, you're right. I mean, one decision could be the difference between being a hero or a villain in the eyes of even the public. But I mean, Batman himself in The Dark Knight was like, you need to pin me as the one that did this.
Yeah.
Because they can't have Harvey as the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I was very much drawn to that Batman. And I think Ben Affleck's Batman in the Justice League and all of those series, I think it's been incredible.
I love him as Batman. And I don't care what anybody else says.
I know we don't have Lance here, and we've said this many a times in front of him as well, so it's not a lie. I do enjoy Superman as played by Henry Cavill in Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman and Justice League. Because we're so used to seeing the perfect picture that is Superman. And him being so perfect made him more alien, in my opinion. But when you saw his flaws come out and the human side of him in these newer Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon versions, it made you feel like he was actually on our side, as opposed to an extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
So. But he was the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the Injustice comics, one thing happens to him and he becomes the villain.
Yeah.
Like, he's Superman. But if Joker can get him to kill his own wife, he becomes the villain.
I mean, that's exactly it. But it's very much it. It is so much more than just he's the bad guy. Now, in a lot of ways, when you're first establishing a villain, you know, whether it be in a comic book, whether it be in your role-playing game, whether it be in a video game, in a lot of ways, sure, this guy's a bad guy. He's killing all these people. He's capturing all these people and locking them in the dungeon for no reason. You know, I have very little information to go on, and everything he's doing seems like it is evil. So obviously he's the bad guy. Strahd.
Mm-hmm.
In every intent, should be the bad guy. And then you hear about his story, and you're like, wow. Is he really the bad guy? You know, I feel like that is what... And in the same lens, if you use that same lens, and you look at guys like Professor X. Later in the comic books, you find out Professor X uses his powers on his own X-Men in a lot of ways to kind of block certain things so that they will still continue to somewhat conform to what he wants. And you go, wow, is this guy really a hero? I mean, you know, It's to me, that's what I love about the hero story, about the villain story, is it can be so much more than what's on the surface. Mm-hmm. I know that one of the conversations very quickly, and then we'll kind of start wrapping things up, but one of the conversations we had just recently with our very good friend Peter Spellos, who was on the show a few episodes ago.
Which we have more information about him with the show.
Yes, absolutely. We were talking about, very candidly, some of the new Star Wars movies. And regardless what your opinion is on them, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, you know, obviously, this is the generation's new Star Wars series. And there are a lot of really cool moments in some of the offshoot stories, and there are a lot of really cool moments in the principal series. But in general, it's kind of a controversial series because you have people who grew up with the original Star Wars. You know, the original New Hope and Empire and Return of the Jedi. And they have a very different opinion and perspective on what their heroes look like versus this new generation with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and then whatever this next movie is going to be to kind of seal out that new trilogy. But he was asking us a question. He said, why is it that I cannot connect with these characters? Why is it so difficult for me to see where the real character meat is? And now this is also the same guy who said that when it came to Rogue One, he really liked Rogue One because you feel for Jen. You feel for her life and what she goes through and that hero's journey for her. And in my opinion, kind of examining what we've talked about, what I would say in that observation for Rogue One versus... So for Jen Erso's story versus
Ren
versus Ren's story.
Ren and Rey. Sorry, Kylo Ren.
Rey, that's who I was thinking of, is Rey. Yes. So for Rey's story, cuz she's the main, in my opinion, main protagonist versus Jen's story.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, the reason why you connect, well, the reason why I connect with Jen a little bit more than I connect with Rey is because you see Ren or Jen's story from the beginning, and from the beginning, her story is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Her life is at risk. Her family is at risk. Her whole story is a story of failures or skin of your teeth victories. Whereas with Rey, some of that element is missing.
Yeah, because we don't know her background.
Right. And I feel like if they made a stronger foundational connection with her, why she feels the way she feels, I mean, that's what we loved about Luke. Luke started out, you see his family, you see, you know, obviously he's a kid who wants to get into the rebellion, he wants to fight against the evil empire, and you're just like, yeah, buddy, like, that's awesome, you know? And then he meets this guy because it just incidentally happens to lose one of his droids, and he gets back, and his family has been destroyed by the empire that he wanted to fight. And now everything's risky. Now everything is on the line. And to me, I just feel like we have not gotten to that phase yet for anybody in the story.
Yeah.
There's not, I mean, what's on the line? You know, in this last movie, The Last Jedi, which I liked. I've liked all the movies. Do I like them as much as the original series? Probably not, mostly because I have such a strong connection with that, sure. That original series. But in my opinion, they're still great movies. Mm-hmm.
And they made Star Wars movies, yes, which is an important thing.
Yes, I agree. But in that respect, I feel like in this last movie, they talked a lot about the Resistance being on the line. You know, what's on the line? Well, the Resistance is getting ready to be destroyed. But what we want to know is, why is that important to us? Why should that be important to us? You know, I understand that the First Order is basically the remnant of the Empire and the Resistance is the remnant of the Republic. But it's like the connection we had with these characters and with the Republic from the original series was that you had these people that were beyond evil. And then you had these people that were a glimmer of hope. And you just don't have that same emotional connection yet because there's nothing, there's not as much on the line. It just doesn't feel like there's as much on the line.
Right.
I feel like that's probably the best answer I can give as to why is it so difficult to connect with those characters in that story, because it's hard to see what's on the line, you know, and the stories are kind of tend to be a little muddier. You know, well, there's no clean lines.
And that's ultimately what I think people were upset about with Last Jedi. As good as Last Jedi was, yeah. Which I agree, I'm with you, it easily fits in the other seven movies just fine. which is just so amazing to say. Nine if you count Rogue One, and 10 if you count the Clone Wars cartoon movie and stuff like that. But is that none of the new characters got any major character development.
Yeah, it's just these people exist.
Except for Rose.
Yeah. Well, yes. Which I love her character. I love, but that's the thing. Like what I like about Rose is that, what did it take? 3 minutes for that? Now, I obviously, you know, kind of stretched out between those, but it's like, you see the first sister.
It didn't even take that long.
And the sacrifice that she makes, and then you see Rose down in the hall. And you see the necklace that she has. And it's just like, wow.
We're immediately invested in that character.
Okay. You know, and then it's like, okay. Well, why can't we have that same... Like, to me, what I want to see is... I want to see Finn find out that his parents were whatever. I want to see Rey find out that her parents were actually more than just whatever.
Or... if it is just whatever, at least show us the parents just dropping off the child.
Just give us some sort of seed of establishment for those characters. Why should we be emotionally invested in those characters? We were emotionally invested in the story with Luke and Vader because all of a sudden you had this worst bad guy ever in the galaxy versus this glimmering diamond in the rough nobody from Tatooine. And then Empire changed the stakes. Because now it's his dad.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, so the first movie was good. This movie has changed my life.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have the resolution of that in Return of the mm-hmm. Jedi. We don't have that same investment because it just feels like outside of the Kylo Ren story, which I feel like is good, but very conflicting and somewhat confusing. Because you have these two parental figures that he's mentally and emotionally struggling with, and then you have this mysterious guy that has been like his, you know, ultimate trainer since Luke, and then it's just over.
Yep.
And you don't really know why. And you're just kind of like, okay, wow, you were.
I think, though, and I think this will segue pretty well. I think when it comes to movies like that, trilogies, mm-hmm. et cetera, and I will say about Infinity War, be glad there's more to come.
Yeah.
Because the hope that is there is that they'll be able to provide a little bit more. Even if it's just a, here's where Rey's parents were.
Yeah.
Here's where Finn's parents were.
Yeah.
This is who Snoke was. Now let's continue on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
First couple minutes, you know, we've taken care of those stories. Oh, okay, we're all wrapped up. The trilogy's coming in. Now we can just add a little bit.
You can do it. You can do it in a 10, 20 minute, like they have these weird force visions all of a sudden, and now all of a sudden we have all of the blanks that needed to be filled in are finally filled in.
Sure.
You know, and then, okay, now. What are the real stakes?
Like one of the most important elements in Last Jedi was the two different views of how Kylo mm-hmm. and how Luke saw the interaction that ultimately separated them and caused right. the Knights of Ren to separate.
Yep.
You know, that was huge. And they were little clips. They didn't take that long whatsoever.
I really loved that. But that was the more interesting story to me, even.
Yeah.
Was the fall of Kylo Ren because of the caution of Luke and what he thought he needed to do versus what he actually needed to do. That, to me, is the better story.
Yeah. Hero versus villain.
Right. And how a hero becomes the villain.
When a hero comes along.
Yeah. I need a hero. Okay. Wow. Wow. This was so much better of a conversation than I expected it to be.
Yes,
I'm so glad we had it. I'm
sorry
sure
it was only two of us, but...
That's right. And all of you who weren't here with us, well, you know, missed out on your opportunity, but it's okay.
It'll come up again,
Probably. We repeated 28,000 episodes, and we only have 175.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, math.
Right. So... this will be, I think, the last podcast before Indie PopCon.
Okay.
I think the way that things have recorded out, and I know we haven't Hopefully. Mentioned much in the last one, but Indie PopCon, June mm-hmm. 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Is a thing.
You should be there.
Yes,
it's
you
only
should.
Like $60 for the weekend. It's
which is
totally
great.
Worth it.
$60 for that 3 days, and they've got a ton. Not only do they have a ton of great stars that are going to be there, mm-hmm. movies and TV and video games and YouTubers and stuff, but they have so much really cool stuff to do while
yes.
you're there.
Yes. Definitely be checking out Fear the Charity's Never Ending Dungeon.
Yes. Running Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's right.
Which
is awesome. Co-sponsored by the Established Facts. The big news we're going to share, as I mentioned earlier, is Peter Spellos is back.
That's right.
At Indie PopCon.
That's right.
And not only will he be there in a table next to us.
Yep.
He, along with our improv company, Breakfast Anytime, will be doing a panel to discuss improv, and we'll be putting on a show. Once we have we should have schedules by the time this posts, but once we do, we will definitely make sure to
yes, absolutely.
Hit the website with it.
I think we're shooting for a Saturday show. I would love it for it to be Saturday evening. I think that would be really
yeah.
cool, but we'll see. Yeah, and we'll have definitely a lot more details on schedules and stuff like that. So if you have not gotten a chance to see us, Breakfast Anytime, we are hysterical.
Yep.
And
we're on YouTube. We have our first two shows up there.
Yes.
They're
please check them
filmed
out.
On a camera or
yeah.
not on,
yeah,
a phone,
on a phone.
So
yeah.
But you know what? They're fun anyways.
Yep.
We're
yep.
making fun of ourselves. Why
That's
not?
Right.
Let's see. 2 weeks after that, of course, Fear the Con
Fear
in St. Louis.
If you have not gotten your ticket, it is free.
Yeah, it is free. Only got to
sign
find
up for
somewhere
events.
To stay.
Yep.
Preferably not on the side of the road, but if that's where you land, you deal with the police.
I'm pretty sure. Wow. There it is. I'm pretty sure the Drury is sold out completely.
Yep. Nearly positive.
And so, yeah, definitely check. Maryland Heights is not very far. Bonnie and I have stayed in Maryland Heights, which is the area that the original Fear the Con, well, I guess not the original, but the one prior to it being at the Drury.
Yep.
Was close to where we were staying in Maryland Heights, and I think it's only a 20-minute or less drive mm-hmm. from Maryland Heights to Brentwood, which is where the Drury is. There's tons of stuff around that hotel as well. If you are into needing to go to the grocery. There's a Target, there's a Chick-fil-A, and there's a Michael's Craft Store That's across right. the street.
And for a nice dinner, there's a Bonefish Grill
in the parking lot.
In the parking lot, yeah. And then almost 5 weeks after that, is, of course, the 51st Gen Con.
Yes.
In Indianapolis. They just did event registration. Definitely get online and check out some of the cool events going on. They are proposing there may be another sellout this year. They don't know for sure yet, but they had one of their biggest record-breaking event registration Sundays they've had thus far.
Nice.
I didn't get a lot of details behind it, but I know I managed to get everything I wanted, but I was only 1,800 when I hit the button.
Nice.
So I know that that's a challenge for a lot of folks, but there's going to be plenty of stuff going on.
Other than the stuff that you got for me, I didn't get anything.
Nothing?
So it was really confusing to me because I only put on my wish list for two events because if you are Critical Role fans, the cast of Critical Role will be at Gen Con. And they are doing a weekly show on Tuesdays talking about their previous Thursday night campaign episode called Talks Machina.
Okay.
And so that's free on Saturday night.
Nice.
I had that on my wish list. And then they're also doing an autograph session on Saturday from 1 to 4.
Both sold out, though, when you got it?
So the Talks Machina, I did not get a chance to get a ticket for. The autograph session said that it processed properly, and then when I went back to check my wish list, it was sold out, and I didn't have a ticket for it. I did not understand.
You only have 2 hours to process your cart, if you didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't like that, but okay. That's probably why then.
Okay.
That stinks.
Yeah, we can talk, because I have two tickets for all three events I'm doing on Saturday, so... because Deb's not going to be there for other things. We'll talk about later. But anyways, so con season is in conjunction July 6th, 7th, and 8th, I think.
Weekend after 4th of July.
Right. So,
which we don't have anything planned for that yet, but that might be something that we look into as well.
But yeah, lots going on.
Yeah. We were looking at our episode schedule to figure out what we were talking about for these episodes and realized that literally after this episode, the next 8 or so scheduled episodes are cons. Yeah.
Con coverage.
Which is usually our summer.
It is, but that's okay.
Yeah, and then we'll come back and do some fun stuff. So.
I think we're going to have some role-playing games when we get back from
Gen Con. Yeah, I really want to run a 5th Ed episode series and then possibly a Microscope episode series if we can.
Sure.
But we'll see.
It'll be fun.
That was weird.
It was.
All right. So anyway, thank you so much for listening to episode 175. On our last episode, we established that when traveling, remember when traveling, never forget your toothbrush, your favorite game, and a towel.
Always bring a towel.
Always bring a towel.
And don't panic.
That's right. On episode 175 of The Established Facts, and I feel like this sums up our episode so well, heroes think the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Villains think the needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many. And anti-heroes think the needs of balance outweigh the needs of all.
Did you just say Jedis are anti-heroes?
No, great Jedis are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm totally a great Jedi.
Okay.
But that's a discussion for another time.
Totally different.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to episode 175 of The Established Facts, and we will check you later.
Bye.
Deuces.
Please visit us at www.theestablishedfacts.com and our Facebook page, facebook.com/theestablishedfacts. If you'd like to support us by buying some merchandise, visit cafepress.com/castingrobot.
Bonus!